Welcome to Picasso's Cafe and the February on tap for KOSU Radio. Thank you so much for being here. Do want to thank Picasso's very much for letting us have this here tonight. The special, if you haven't asked yet, is Anchor Steam with a vegetarian empanada. That's not vegan. It is vegetarian, though. So do enjoy that. It's very good beer. Rachel had some, and it's very, very good. So Anchor Steam beer. I'm Michael Cross. I'm sure you've heard me in the mornings. And, of course, we try to cover everything that's going on at the state capitol. And one of the biggest issues right now at the state capitol is the budget. Although there's a lot of bills you're hearing about that are going in and out of committees, one of the issues that they have to deal with every year, and it's mandated by the Constitution, is to balance a budget. And to put together, using estimates from the Oklahoma Tax Commission, the Equalization Board, about how much money the state of Oklahoma will have to spend through income, through taxes, fees, et cetera, over the next year, starting July 1st. When the estimate was done, they came out that it was $611 million less than they had last year. So what we've got is we've got two panelists to talk about what goes on in the state of Oklahoma as far as lawmakers having to deal with the budget, what kind of issues they'll be dealing with as far as the shortfall goes with $611 million less than they had for the 2015 budget, which we're dealing with right now. And what we have is we have Jonathan Small, who is with the Oklahoma Council of Public Affairs. If you could please give him a hand. And David Blatt with the Oklahoma Policy Institute. And the way we're going to start this is I'm going to just ask them to both make a couple of opening statements, a couple of minutes for an opening statement, and then we're just going to open it up to you. This is about you asking the questions that you want asked about what's going on with the budget. So let them open up with a couple of statements. Jonathan, why don't we start with you? Just something to, just a couple of minutes, just an opening statement.
Well, one of the things that I think about is probably going to date David and I is that we've been at this both too long. So this is probably what now our third or fourth budget shortfall over, you know, since the early 2000s. And hopefully this time will bear out that the legislature decides to tackle the budget and prioritize spending in some way. Is that that's my hope. One of the things to keep in mind is that state revenues are actually at all-time highs. Much of the budget shortfall is really self-inflicted challenges that the legislature created itself. One, it raided and pillaged revolving funds last year so that it could make record appropriations. And they haven't quite made the determination yet that they're going to do that this year. And so really, the real shortfall is a roughly $315 million in actual lower tax collections that they have. Now, if you count the fact that they, you know, spent money that they didn't really have ownership to spend last year, then you get to the $600 million number. So there's a host of things that can be done that the legislature needs to tackle. Blue and red states across the country are tackling the issue of rising healthcare costs, and that's something that definitely weighs on Oklahoma's budget that we need to address. When you look at the costs for the burden that teachers are having to bear for healthcare costs, the legislature has had to increase by $100 million on an annual basis the amount that it dedicates for teachers' salaries just in the last 5 years. And we submit that I think teachers would rather have that in a pay raise that they can actually decide what they do with, as opposed to funding an antiquated health insurance system. So hope to talk later about specific ideas and turn it over to David.
David, go for it.
Okay. My name is David Blatt, and first of all, I want to say thank you to KOSU for this opportunity. I'm executive director of Oklahoma Policy Institute, okpolicy.org, and we provide information and analysis on a wide range of issues of concern to Oklahomans guided by a pair of core commitments. One is to fair and adequate funding of public services. The other is to the expansion of economic opportunities for all Oklahomans. So budget and tax policy work is very central to what we do. And as we look at the state's serious budget shortfalls this year, a point that we think is really important to make is that as we are facing a $600 million shortfall, you can roughly divide it into two equal components. Half of the shortfall is associated with the economic slowdown, with low energy prices, and the anticipated declines in income tax collections, sales tax collections, gross production tax collections associated with the slowdown. But half of the shortfall was there before the slowdown. And I think what it really points to is that Oklahoma faces a chronic fiscal gap, a structural budget deficit, where in good times and in bad, our state's revenue system is not producing the revenue that is needed to fund the regular cost of providing services. So that even before this downturn, and Jonathan alluded to some of this, even before this downturn, we were cutting budgets last year, 5% across the board cuts to most state agencies, even when we had one of the strongest state economies in the nation. We did have to resort to raiding revolving funds and using one-time revenues to pass last year's budget, and even then we did cuts to Medicaid, to corrections, and to other areas. So I think we have to be serious about how do we get our fiscal system in order over the long term. The economy will recover, but our budget problems are likely not to, unless we can really face up to the question of what do we expect state government to do, how much is it going to cost, and how are we going to pay for it. And as I'll say more during the question and answers, the frequent repeated tax cuts and proliferation of tax breaks has really left us in a situation where our tax system is not keeping up to the cost of providing services.
We have any questions to start out with? Let me ask you real quick, the first thing I thought of is that leaders have said that everything is on the table, including the rainy day, and several other, that you talked about the revolving funds. Should everything be on the table, or in your opinions, each of you, is there something that should not be touched?
Well, I'll tell you with the first, I'll jump in here. The first thing that should be on the table is the irresponsible tax cut that was passed last session that is going to lower our top income tax rate from 5.25% to 5%. So here's what happened last year. The legislature decided they couldn't pass a tax cut that would take effect right away given all their budget needs. So what they did is they pushed it down the road a year, of course, without any forecast of what the budget situation would look like, without in any way saying what would we need to fund education and corrections and human services and healthcare, areas where we've been seriously underfunding services for years. Instead, they pushed it down the road for a year and they tied it to a trigger. They said only if revenues are going to grow by 1% between this year and next year will the tax cut take effect. Well, we've ended up in a situation, the way they wrote the bill, even though revenues are projected to drop by $300 million now, even though we have a $600 million shortfall, that tax cut is still supposed to take effect January 1st, 2016. That's $50 million towards this year's shortfall, $157 million towards next year. So if they're serious about everything being on the table, that's where I would start.
Jonathan.
You know, I think that before we would talk about taking hard-earned money from families who are trying to afford higher deductibles and copay costs related to growing healthcare costs, and the higher costs associated with higher education, and the higher costs if you're a parent and you're trying to get your child out of the Oklahoma City Public School District right now, which is under a civil rights investigation, I think that we should look at the ways that the state of Oklahoma has refused to look at its budget. For example, the way that we conduct our state employees' health insurance plan, we actually tie the hands of the state because we require them to pay and require that copays and deductibles be paid the same, regardless of whether or not the state employee or teacher makes a good decision. both city government, county government, Oklahoma County, the cities of Yukon, McAllister, and Ardmore are implementing a new policy regarding their healthcare plan where they're actually incentivizing their patients to choose care that can be purchased at a better price. So for example, in Oklahoma County in the first few months, they saved over $1 million on roughly 3,000 employees. They saved $700,000 for the county and $300,000 for county employees, resulting in essentially a pay raise for those employees at healthcare costs increases. So I think those plenty of areas where the state can actually look at where it's inefficiently spending money before it would go to, you know, the taxpayers once again to fund government, which mind you is still at record highs. Even with the change revenue estimate, it's still at record highs.
Right here.
Hi, I appreciate you guys both being here. Can you kind of talk about how much money that would be in the average Oklahoman's pocket versus how much money were we to eliminate that tax cut would go back into government and what that money could fund if it stayed?
Well, you know, I see you took the first one,
yeah,
so I'll take
ahead.
This
yep.
one.
Absolutely.
Well, you're asking the wrong question because you're first of all, your question assumes that state government could spend it better than an individual. I suggest to you that $25 that an Oklahoma family has to pay its medical copay so that its child could go to the doctor during flu season is more valuable than the hundreds of millions of dollars that we're spending on inefficient health care programs, inefficient Medicaid programs that even blue states are reforming, rodeos, roping contests, losses on golf courses, attempts at space travel, over $40 million for memberships at organizations like the NGA, the NCSL, and other non-critical expenditures. I was a state employee for nearly 700 years. I witnessed the swag that was purchased. So I suggest to you that the notion that state government would spend better than what $25 might be to someone hasn't been supported by history.
David? I think that is exactly the right question for us. I was not a state employee for 700 years, although I was for 3 years. But what the analysis that we've done, and you can find this on our website at okpolicy.org, if you look at the tax cut from 5.25% down to 5%, for the median household in Oklahoma, that's $34 a year. That is a few dollars a month. But that is money that is not going to go to deal with the staffing crisis in our prisons, where our correctional facilities are at 115% of inmate capacity and are being staffed at 65%. That's money that's not going to go to the state aid formula for our schools, which have been cut. State support for schools is down $175 million over where it was 5 years ago, while student enrollment has increased by 45,000 students. That's money.
That's when you adjust for inflation and just accrue to state appropriation.
I let you finish. So overall, if you look at the state budget, you can point to the money that we spent on parks and arts and so on, and you can have a good debate about that. Nine of every $10 goes to 10 appropriated state agencies in the area of education, health, human services, transportation, and public safety. In all of these areas, with the possible exception of transportation, which has done very well in recent years, we have seen continual flat funding and cuts, and we are seeing real cost, real harm to the programs and to the services that Oklahomans expect. So we would argue that the tax cut at this point is entirely the wrong priority, particularly cutting the top income tax rate, which would provide over $2,000 to a family whose income is in the top 1%.
And right over here.
Well, David, all you did was tell me was that a toothbrush takes up a larger portion of someone's salary that makes $30,000 a year versus someone that makes $120,000. So you've stated before that you love the progressive income tax, mm-hmm. you know, because it is a way to redistribute wealth. And that's why people like it. But we're not talking about small pennies and small change when you talk about $100 million that could be saved in the state health choice program. We're not talking about small pennies and small change when you talk about, at a minimum, $20 million that could be changed or be saved from people that illegally enroll on Medicaid. Even the state of Illinois, which is, its political demographics are basically the exact opposite of ours, is implementing audits to its Medicaid rolls. When they audited and looked at the first 420,000 that were enrolled, 210,000 were found to be illegally on the program. So you can't scoff at the fact that Medicaid costs for Oklahoma have grown from $700 million, the state's portion, to nearly $2 billion over the last 10 years. And we're now, healthcare costs, just at Medicaid alone, the Medicaid budget is now more than what we spend on common education, higher education, and other college education combined.
And right over here.
Okay. I'm a state employee that's been around for 700 plus years.
I said seven, so apparently.
Oh, I thought you said 700.
I said seven.
Oh, okay. Well, I've been there
we
30 years.
But
and,
we heard 700.
We, one of the benefits that, we don't have very high salaries, at least in DHS where I work, and one of the benefits is our health insurance system. When we recruit, we say, well, we can't pay you crap, but we can give you some health insurance. And I know that there's been, you know, they're saying, oh, let's do it like Illinois or let's do it like Indiana where we really cut their health insurance benefits. Well, if you don't give, if you, when you don't fund things, when you don't fund public agencies and you don't give the employees decent benefits, then you get what you pay for. You start having crap services, and that's what you're going to have. And they've already changed our retirement system, so we don't have a defined benefit plan anymore.
They changed your retirement system?
Well, not mine personally, but for recruiting in the future. And, you know, and I think it will actually have an impact on my retirement eventually because we won't have the people paying into it. But if you don't give raises and you don't give health benefits, then you can't recruit. We have such turnover. We can't recruit people because we don't get paid decent salaries. Now you're talking about taking away our health benefits.
Actually, you're wrong. I never said to take away your health benefits. Did you say, what was the word that you used there?
Crap.
Oh, okay. So what I said was allowing patients to benefit from the fact that they choose quality care that's at a low price. Oklahoma County hasn't cut anybody's health care plan. They have cut the costs for them. That's what I'm talking about. So that can be implemented. It's been, if you go and you ask Oklahoma County, call Oklahoma County and talk to the clerk's office and ask them on average what they've saved employees that had a copay or a deductible, for example, for a surgery or a diagnostic lab. Saving that money for the employee and the employer is a win-win. And it's being supported by both Republicans and Democrats in Oklahoma. So maybe you know more than what even the Democrats know on that committee.
David?
I'm not going to wade into the employee health debate, but if I can respond a little bit to the Medicaid issue, there's no question that Medicaid costs are growing. What we're seeing in the Medicaid program is what we're seeing in healthcare costs across all domains, employer coverage, Medicare. In fact, if you look at the Medicaid program, they do a very good job of controlling costs. The average cost per beneficiary is less than in the private sector, and healthcare growth has been less than in the private sector. The idea that there is rampant fraud and abuse in the Medicaid program and that there's, you know, a substantial number of people who are receiving benefits that shouldn't be, I don't think is supported by the data. We have a Medicaid program that is fairly restrictive in the eligibility that it provides for working age adults. We do cover many children because they are low income and they're not covered through their employer's health insurance. So we do have the majority of recipients in the Medicaid program are either children. Then we have pregnant women during the course of the pregnancy, low income seniors, and people with disabilities. We could, and I hope would eventually, be covering more people through the Medicaid program if we took advantage of the federal funds to expand health insurance. We may have more of a chance to speak about that. But I would say that the evidence shows that Oklahoma's Medicaid program is a well-run, cost-effective program that is providing good quality care to most recipients. Right over here.
I'd quote one of the assistant directors of the healthcare authority that said that they're very good at reporting to the legislature and the public how much they spend per patient. But what they reported, which was reported by the Tulsa Urban Weekly, was that they actually are very poor at tracking health outcomes and the results of the Medicaid spending as it relates to a health perspective. That was an OCPA's comments. That was the staff comments at the healthcare authority.
Right here.
Thank you both for coming. I appreciate your participation with KOSU in these forums. We all live complicated lives. We all live somewhat specialized lives. There's a lot of things that the state does that I won't do and that Michael Cross won't do. And one of those things is inspecting the bridge between Purcell and Lexington. Another one is the school construction in Moore. We have dead teachers. We have dead students because there wasn't enough oversight in the construction of those schools. That is a government function. I want that to work. I don't want the commerce between Purcell and Lexington to be shut down because they didn't inspect the bridge in time. I want that government. You can have my $35. And I don't know if anybody else wants to donate theirs as well, but I don't want a tax cut. I want government to work.
The Oklahoma Office of Management and Enterprise Services, the state set up a fund where donations can be made. When we last checked, there was around $35,000 that were donated on an annual basis. And so you're welcome to contribute your $35 if you don't want that.
I think you've raised really good, made a really good point about the cuts that we have seen year after year to the regulatory agencies of government. When I talked about the 10 agencies that together make up 90%, 89% of total state appropriations in education, health, human services, public safety, and transportation, most years there's a real effort to spare those agencies from cuts. So last year, most of those core agencies were at least received a flat budget or a slight increase in the case of common education. But the rest of state government, there are over 60 other appropriated agencies. These are the administrative agencies, the regulatory agencies, the economic development agencies, and these agencies get cut time after time after time, 5%, and then another 5%, and then maybe a couple flat years, and then 5%. In the governor's budget this year, when she was only dealing with a $300 million shortfall, not the $611 million shortfall, there was a further 6.25% cut to the Water Resources Board, to the Labor Department. Now, some of these agencies are able to raise part of their operating budget through fees, and we've seen some of them have revolving funds that they can use, but I think throughout state government, we are seeing a declining state workforce, declining funding, and it has an effect. We're seeing fewer inspections, longer time for permitting and licensing, and at certain point, it does put public health and safety at risk. And you know, there is a segment out there that says we need to keep shrinking and shrinking and shrinking government. And the question is, at what point have we shrunk government so much that it is no longer able to perform the functions that that the people of Oklahoma expect it to do?
Other questions? Right over here.
I realize there are a few things here that we probably all agree on, but one common thread that I heard both of you say was that you thought that the way that state government and the way that it budgets right now is fundamentally broken. And so I'm curious what you mean by that. I'm guessing that your opinions probably differ on that, but what about it is broken?
You know, so first of all, there's nothing new under the sun. You know, I worked under the Henry administration in the budget office, and you had the same kinds of budget gimmicks that were played at that time. So it's been going on for years that the legislature's been raiding revolving funds and playing other gimmicks and pushing off to the next year associated costs. You know, one of the things that lawmakers really need to do, you know, we mentioned the issue of, you know, staffing up prisons. Well, quite frankly, where OCPA's at, I don't want to staff up prisons. I would like to clear a bunch of statutes and stop putting nonviolent offenders in prison. So that's where I would rather allocate resources. So much of that is a problem of the legislature, where it gets, you know, lawmakers get their existence and their ego stoked by filing legislation. We pointed out at OCPA that, curiously enough, if you compare the last time the Democrats controlled the legislature, the number of bills which was filed was roughly 1,700 compared to when the Republicans had complete control over the legislature. That number is near 2,600. So I think that's a big part in the problem, is that there's a whole lot of new programs, new ideas, new laws being created, as opposed to the legislature really getting down to the nitty-gritty of looking at agency budgets and increasing spending where they could be and cutting it where it's not a core function of government.
I think that's a great question about what we can do on budgeting. I was at the Capitol today and speaking with a veteran staff person, and we were talking really in the weeds of budgeting, which has to do with the use of money from the cash flow reserve fund, basically cash reserves. And there has been a desire over time to reduce the reliance on cash reserves. But each year there's a shortfall. So this year they talked again about reducing the amount of one-time funding, and I said, I'm reminded of the scene in Airplane where the controller says, I picked a bad week to quit smoking and quit drinking and quit sniffing glue. This is going to be an especially bad year to try to wean the legislature off the reliance on one-time funding when you have a $600 million hole. There are some things that can and should be done in terms of the budget process. We do need to be less reliant on one-time revenue. However, so long as we continue to cut taxes and allow tax breaks to proliferate, we are going to be dependent on raiding revolving funds and using cash reserves and these other budget gimmicks that get us from year to year. I would much rather we would be honest about it and maintain our tax base, close tax loopholes, and not have to deal with those things. We need to do a much better job of revenue forecasting. We need to do a much better job of developing multi-year budgets where we look at what do we project the cost of services to be, knowing what we know about the growth in school enrollment and healthcare enrollment and retirement and so on. We never look beyond a 12-month period or an 18-month period. And we also need to be much more open and transparent. It is extremely difficult to know what the legislature is doing on the budget. The budget bill last year and most years is announced on a Friday afternoon, and it is passed through the House and the Senate by Tuesday morning or Wednesday afternoon. There is absolutely inadequate time for reporters and citizens and think tanks and others to know what was there. By the time anybody knows what is and isn't in the budget, it has already been sent to the governor.